Welcome to Watermark's Church Leadership Podcast, a conversation with church leaders for church leaders. I'm your host, John McGee. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, hey, friends, welcome back. We're continuing our series on things we didn't learn in seminary. Dave and I have been talking what feels like forever, all the things. There's lots of things we didn't learn. So today we're talking about marriage, things we didn't learn in seminary about marriage and ministry and how that all works together. And we've got some very, very special guest in the studio with us. You want to introduce?
Yes, I'd love to introduce my most special guest for sure. My wife, Kara, is joining us today. We've been married 36 years. All those have been really in the context of ministry.
Yeah.
And then you have a special guest I know you want to introduce.
Indeed. To my left is the lovely Pam McGee, my wife of 28 years and ministry partner too. Dave, just like you talked about, we've been, it's all we've ever known is doing ministry together, and it's been a lot of fun. So I think we've got some, you know, some good things to share, just mistakes we've made. There'll be some real fruitful conversation here, but I want to start with a special connection you and Kara had recently. Okay. Why don't we start there?
Well,
and then we'll get going.
Maybe this is our common date night. So 3 weeks ago, date night, Saturday night, we go to a restaurant that I've been to, a new restaurant I love. And so I take Kara for the first time, have a great meal, have a deep conversation. We come in two different cars, meal's over. We're trying to figure out the rest of the night. We've agreed on we're going to go back home and rent the movie. But Kara decides she's going to go to the store first and pick up some ice cream, and then she'll meet us at we'll reunite at home. So she leaves the restaurant in one direction, I go in the other direction. She's headed to the grocery store, I'm headed home, and 4 or 5 miles away now, another part of the area, I am coming up to a stoplight. The light is green, but there's a car with its flashers on. No one's really out this night. It's been a rainy night, so there aren't many cars out on the street. There's a car with the lights flashing in front of me, stopped at a green light, and right in front of me, a car has hit its brakes. So I stop, and I leave a little bit of space. Like, I had to hammer my brakes, but, you know, there's a good 10 feet in front of me. So I look in my rearview mirror to change lanes, and I look up, and this SUV is just barreling down on me, hits me from behind, and drives me into the car in front of me. And so through hand gestures and other signals, you know, I motion the car in front of us. Let's pull out of this main intersection. We pull into a side street, all in the order we collided in. I jump out. I run to the car that I hit, not the car that drove me into the car that I hit. And I just want to make sure the driver's okay. And he's looking a little bit surprised and stunned, but he's okay. And his girlfriend with him is okay. And through the corner of my eye, this woman runs past me. And it's I can tell it's the car that hit me. And I look up in time to catch a good look at her, and it's Kara. So Kara has run into me all the way. We left in different directions. She has hit me from behind and driven me into the car.
My goodness.
And before I can say anything to this poor man that we've struck together, she says, I'm so sorry. I hit the car that was driven into you. And by the way, my husband is driving that car. And this man looked terrified. He looked as if she was out to kill me and he was in the way of all that.
It was very, very bad.
Oh, it's so funny. So
wow. I'm just in shock.
Yeah, you didn't see that one coming, did you?
I did not see that coming.
Dave told me that a couple weeks ago. He goes, I want to tell Pam. Pam and I just don't keep secrets. I didn't feel like a secret that was violating any trust, so I waited.
Yeah, you did a good job keeping that, because I'm shocked. That's awesome.
It's a shocking story.
I'm so sorry.
That's amazing.
Well, thanks. Everybody's okay.
Everybody's okay.
Car got totaled.
Oh, yeah. All that.
We got a good insurance settlement, and we're already on the way to get another vehicle.
So, okay.
Yeah, everything's all right.
Good. Well.
And I was honestly, I'm hardly ever proud of myself in marriage, but I think I did a good job of just kind of not being upset, letting
amazing.
It go.
Amazing.
Okay.
I mean, he really
These
was.
Things happen, I suppose.
I was amazed at the grace he gave me, and our daughters were like, Dad is amazing.
Who is this man?
I love it.
Okay, I'm sorry I left. I'm sorry that happened, but that's crazy.
It is crazy.
And it's funny. The further after it goes the on, the
after
funny
the
it
fact.
Is.
Thanks. Yeah. The Lord, yeah. Dave's okay, yeah. And the other.
We had an appointment last night in two different cars, and I was watching my rearview mirror the whole time.
PTSD.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay.
Some side streets.
Great. Well, hey friends, let's jump in to the content. Thank you. I'm looking for a bridge out of here. There's some, you know, tough situations in marriage. How you handle them has everything to do with, the state of your marriage. That could have set you way back, you know, Dave, the way you handle that. But I think I wanted to share that story because I don't know how the rest of this conversation will go. My hunch is it's going to be a pretty favorable, rosy picture of marriage, which, you know, I think by and large, the four of us really enjoy being married. But there's also some tough stuff, and that's reality. It's both. So I was actually really encouraged before we hit record, you know, you know, both Pam and Carrie, you guys talked about overwhelmingly, I think, how it's been a positive experience to be in ministry and be married. I don't know if that's everybody's experience. That's been yours. Dave, you said the same thing. So let's just start there. Talk about, you know, the blessing of being married, being in ministry. We'll talk about some practical stuff, and then we'll end with why this even matters, why this conversation even should be had. So let's just start there. Hey, what's been fun? What's been the blessing? What do you like about both being married and being in ministry together?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I love that we have been in ministry. So we've been married, well, almost 29 years this summer. And we have been in ministry the whole time. And even when we were in college, when we were dating and engaged, we did ministry together. And so when I think about our marriage, I think about us being in ministry. And that's, I mean, our family first, and then what we do together has kind of been the whole thing. And so it's been really fun. And I think back the first 3 or 4 years we were married, we did junior high youth ministry.
Okay.
And so that was lots of, I mean, it was deep discipleship mainly. It was me just like running around Houston trying to find some random thing for the skit that week. I think I
most
remember
random thing you ever
lots
found.
Of that, buying some frozen fish for some skit or
giant,
you know,
frozen fish. Absolutely.
Exactly.
That
Sammy
was a classic.
The Snapper.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember that. It was classic. But I mean, but that was kind of a common goal of just how much fun. Those lock-ins were so fun and so horrible. The retreats and that kind of thing. And then moving into the last 20 years, just marriage ministry.
Yeah.
And I remember you came to me and we're like, hey, we've got this new marriage, you know, pre-married class. We got pre-married weekend, merge weekend. I don't even think it was called merge yet. And we need someone to talk, you know, for a couple hours about sex and intimacy with these engaged couples. And you know who that's going to be? Or I'm so excited. And I was like, oh, who? I can't wait to kind of learn and hear. And he was like, it's us, babe.
No one else could say yes.
That's right.
Always wanted
we're
to
talking
do.
No
with,
one else.
You know, about sex with 200 of our closest friends.
Yeah.
And so, but just even figuring that out together. And so it's been fun. So the fun part has been there. There's definitely been challenges, but that's what's, when I think about us married, I think about ministry to family, ministry.
Yeah.
In church together.
Yeah. And you get to see, I mean, I think together, you know, we get to be faithful and then just see, you know, God change lives. And we have a front row seat at that as, you know, as a couple doing that together.
For
and
sure.
Which is, you know, just something I've been grateful to do. When I think about what's great in my life, it's about, you know, being married, doing ministry together. Trusting God with the results, but just together, you know, in our own unique ways, we're wired very, very differently, very differently.
Yes, we are.
And somehow, you know, God's saw fit to put us together and just, you know, we've just been trying to do our best and we've grown, you know, that very first night. I do remember sharing with you, you're going to speak about sex and you're like, what are you doing? Why? You know, and then it was so great. We were on a boat. A few weeks ago, we're out literally on the middle of the ocean, on a giant sailboat, and which is rocking. It's moving back and forth, guys. We're sitting in the middle of the deck, and I look over, and Pam's got like this athletic position. You know, she's sitting there. We're speaking.
I had to keep my stance
couple.
Wide
had
so I didn't legs, fall.
Right,
and the boat's rocking, and we were talking about sex, and it was really easy. It was fun. That was the night we talked about sex. I mean, it was really, ironically, it was really rocky, and you know, and so just even growing together in that, you know, there's been hard. Of course, there has been, but by and large, I think it's been a real blessing, and so I think if I wanted to start with anywhere, it would be those of you who aren't married, you know, and maybe one day hope to be, it can actually be a fantastic thing. I know there's horror stories. I know divorce rates are high and they're high in ministry and the church, but overwhelmingly it can be a really, really positive experience. So Dave and Kara, first thoughts just about, you know, your journey, what's been fun, the blessing of being married and being in ministry.
Yeah, Dave and I have the blessing of growing up together. So I was about 12, he was 13, and
that's
we met.
Amazing.
Not when we married, though. It was later than that.
That's right. Well, we met.
Yeah.
We
right.
didn't get married. We
right.
met in youth
no.
group. And we met doing ministry. You know, we met sharing the gospel in groups through the church and church choir, even though Dave hates
well, I was there because singing. Of you. That's why I was there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
The draw.
Yes. And so that's how we met. And then that's where the journey was. And so I have always loved doing ministry with Dave.
Yeah.
And church planting was a perfect fit for us in that season.
Yeah. I think there's an intimacy to be found in doing ministry together as a husband and wife. It's just really unique and powerful. And, you know, there have been times that I've had a role in a church and Kara's been a faithful member of that church, but we didn't necessarily shoulder to shoulder do ministry together like we're doing now with Regeneration.
Right.
And
right.
so yeah, there's just something really uniquely intimate about being able to be deeply invested in ministry with your spouse. That's dynamic. There's challenges that come along with that for sure, but the reward in that is just fantastic. It's incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to hear you guys talk about your marriage. You know, I mean, Dave, you drug Kara all over America, you know, planting churches, running, helping church planters and, you know, working in churches. And but when you talk about it, you talk about the crazy things that happened. And then you always end up smiling about how you guys were in it together, you know, and which is really, really fun to hear. Really encouraging. OK, let's talk about let's take the other side of this coin. What do you think is uniquely challenging about being in ministry and being married? Right. So I think there's some, you know, whatever occupation you have, there's just some benefits of it. I assume if I was a trainer, I would be in better shape than I am. And so being in ministry, there's something that where you get to share together this kind of spiritual intimacy. You get to see, you know, God do things. There's always some type of professional downside, or, you know, where you're giving yourself to this professional, or just it's just an important part of your life. What's harder? What's been tough about your journey? What do you think leaders should be eyes wide open on?
You know, I think one thing that resonates with me, I don't know how Pam, you and John feel about this, but I think Kara would agree with me, is that when Paul, you know, in Scripture, when Paul goes through all the travails he's experienced in ministry, the last thing he says, and just the daily anxiety that he feels for the churches, not worrisome anxiety, but just the weightiness of leading people spiritually, and there's just a pressure that comes with doing ministry because the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
This is about people and their relationship with God. And you're getting to see the very best in the lives of people and also at times the very worst. And so there is just a pressure cooker that comes in being involved in ministry. And every marriage has its own challenges, but the pressure that's applied in the context of doing ministry just tends to, I think, exacerbate or amplify the fractures in the relationship or the difficulties you face. And so that would be my answer. I don't know what it's like to serve in other professions. Maybe other people could relate to that. But I just think being in ministry in many ways is a pressure cooker, and I think you feel it most profoundly in your home and in your marriage.
That's good. Anything else?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Just the fact that you, unlike other jobs, although I know most people, you know, any job, you can bring your work home with you. But there is just a piece that it's really virtually impossible to just leave it at the office. John and I handle just when there's something undone, like open loops and stuff that's not reconciled and fixed, we handle that differently. And so whether it's between us or like if there's a couple we're working with and like I can't sleep, like I feel like I need to call them right now. And he's like, hey, we can, you know, we said what we need to do. You know, we feel like, you know, hey, just let's pray about it. We can have breakfast tomorrow. I don't think anything is going to happen. Or there might be a time that, hey, I do feel like there's an urgency and hey, maybe he'll listen, you know, and we'll go, hey, that we do need to make steps now. But just figuring out, hey, how much does
absolutely. So a constant struggle for us is a wiring issue as much as anything. And so Pam's superpower is her ability to care for people and like a lot of people. I think about her, if you know, in the military, there's that plane. It's the E-3. It's the AWACS airplane. It's got that rotating radar thing on the top, and you launch it up, and it just tracks everything on the battlefield, you know, and that's Pam. And so she's like, you know, this person needs encouragement for this, and this person, you know, they found out, you know, a diagnosis in the family, their aunt, and you know, all these things. And Pam like somehow keeps up with it all. And then, you know, then has compassion and cares for them and wants to, you know, literally meet all those needs. And, you know, my MO is much more, hey, if we take care of the big stuff, like everything else will take care of itself. But Pam starts from the bottom up. I start from the top up. And so we get into, you know, I think we can frustrate each other where she will say, I probably feel calloused. Pam, I would go, hey, babe, like we can't run around to every single person we've ever met and show compassion, you know, and take them to dinner and things like that, you know. And so, but it's been good. It's been, I think, for both of us, you know, I think Pam will probably say, hey, I've learned to trust God, you know, the long nature of sanctification in someone's life. I've learned to be compassionate and just go, this is inconvenient. It's not where I'd rather be. But you know what? I think sometimes someone is in your ditch and it's your responsibility, not other people. And you don't punt to say, because this is my title, I don't get involved down. No, they're in your ditch, and you get in your car and you go over there, or you pick up the phone, or you take them something. And so that's been both a blessing, but that's also been the hard part, just our different personalities.
Yeah, I think it's been sanctifying, and we're coming to a place 29 years in that we're kind of in the groove of figuring that out. Okay, I get it, babe. I need to calm down. I mean, we can sleep on it, and you know, we can figure it out tomorrow. But I think there's been, like, we've kind of hit up, you know, just against each other with some conflict on that sometimes, just navigating that.
Yeah. And then I think too, just the other, you know, occupational hazard here is that because, you know, everybody's work has got some type of physical component to it, some type of emotional component to it. This is a very deeply spiritual work. And you take that home and you wear it, and it's tough. You know, it can be really, really tough. And there's been times where it's felt like a dark cloud, you know, is over our house because of different things that are going on, you know, spiritually in our congregation. And that is different. That is different than some professions. And it's something you're going to have to learn how to navigate. You know, Pam's done a great job with that. I feel like I can come home and I don't have to pretend that everything's amazing. She can give me space. She's learned how to not try to, like, jump in there and fix everything and just kind of listen and pray and give me space. And generally, you know, those things, you know, will take care of themselves. But I wish at times I could have all the upsides, but not that emotional, spiritual burden that I bring home. That's something that we've had to manage. And you know, your spouse has been waiting. They've been chasing kids all day, and they're waiting for you to come home. And you can't always punt. I do think you sometimes can go, hey, I'm kind of tapped out. I'll be here, but I don't have a 10 to give you. I can give you a 1 or 2 or 3, but that's probably something I didn't see coming. But it's something that I think we figured out how to, you know, how to navigate. So
yeah, just I think that learning how to support each other. You know. Yeah. I was curious, Kara, what's the best, or how have you learned just to support Dave when he comes out? Like if it's, you're like, I know there's the black cloud, or there's just been a really rough week, or what's the thing that you?
I can think of a lot of ways I have not been so great supporting.
You could say that's, those are instructive as well. Yeah, go ahead.
So I wish I had some positive ones, but no, I think I was thinking of, like, the whole church planting thing. I had so many ideas, and
most of them are really good.
Yeah, not all, and like I would literally check his emails. Like he'd say, "Well, I'm going to send this. Well, let me hear it." You know, and he's
running by the board here.
Right. Okay. She'd had editorial privilege, you know, not check. I'm like, she's free to look at anything on my phone, but she wanted to. But yeah, she was the editor for a while.
Okay.
Yes. Grammarly. Totally. I've been known to be Grammarly
leaned
before.
So hard in. That's funny. It was really not good. But from other wise counsel around us in ministry, they spoke into our lives and specifically mine, and said, hey, you know, he's the pastor. And the saying was through the network there was, you pastor the pastor, you're the wife pastor the pastor, and you're the only one who can. And so that was a great season of my life to check myself. And I just started, that's when I did start doing more positive things as far as praying for Dave and really, you know, just supporting him in the decisions that God had led him in. And
she's being modest. One of the things about her, she's got a genius EQ and she can just read me, you know, from a mile away. And so every night I'd come in, I think she could look me in the eye quickly and think, okay, you know, man, he's a little bit joyful today, and so let's celebrate at dinner. Or, you know, he needs a little bit of space and time, and so let me, you know, accommodate him in that way. So she's always been really in tune to, and quick and accurately able to read where I'm at. You know, I think for us, as you guys talked about your personality differences, I think for us, where we've experienced the worst part of being married in ministry is the way that our sin areas work together. Yeah. So I think it's okay for me to share, because you've been public in this with Regen, that Kara has a propensity to be codependent. So she wants to make everybody feel happy all the time. And if they don't, she feels it with them. I am on the opposite end, and my sin areas are deep insecurity. I want to prove myself all the time to everyone, and specifically I want people to know I'm right. So you take a sinful idealist and you partner him with a woman who's codependent, and that can lead to some really difficult marriage relationship issues where the more that she is frustrated with me because I'm making people upset, the more determined I am that, well, if someone's not upset, I'm not being a good leader, and therefore I'm going to step into it even further. And then the next thing you know, this issue that's kind of more of a church issue becomes a marriage issue, and you're drifting apart, and you're angry with each other in ways you really don't need to be. And so that's one of the areas that we've struggled in. But if there's something I admire most about Kara, it would be she's super quick to repent. She's very cognizant of her own sin, and she's very gentle in inviting me to do the same. She calls me out, but in a way that's tender and kind, and, hey, here's maybe another thing to think about. It's not prescriptive. She doesn't, you know, label me, you know, with as a narcissist as I walk through the door, but she asks leading questions that take me down that path so that I come to the realization that I've been a little bit self-centered that day. And so it took us a while to figure that out, but it's really sweet now.
That's good. Kara, any other thoughts on, it's such a great phrase, hey, we pastor the pastor. And so, you know, we're sitting here, the conversation is two guys who are on staff, two women who are married to guys on staff. So that's how this conversation is going to go. Everybody listening to this is an adult. They can, you know, flip the other side and contextualize as they see fit. But that idea of pastoring the pastor or encouraging your spouse, helping them grow, any other thoughts on that? What have you learned in that regard?
Yes, I think, like Dave said, I think listening to him and seeing where his, not just, I think sometimes you do, as a wife, you want to help them grow, but really want to encourage them in their strengths.
Yeah,
you know, good. And I think the listening has gotten a lot better. And of course, you know, if in ministry, it is a lot of listening. And so I think the Lord has definitely worked on my heart that I need to be a better listener.
Yeah.
And I don't need to be always, so pastoring him, encouraging him means listening to him and not always speaking over him and telling him, I got an idea, yeah. You know. So
good. That's so good. Well, Payman, you've got lots of, I've seen you in action. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one as well.
Yeah, as Kara was talking about that pastor, the pastor, that's really good. I think back to a friend about 10 years ago that talked about just the responsibility she feels because her husband listens to her.
Yes.
And like he values what she says, not just in with the kids and with marriage, but like in business. You know, this was a guy in a business and in ministry. And just to know that John listens to me, he trusts the Holy Spirit in me. And so I just need to be prayed up and ready and discerning. And my MO is not to sit down and be introspective. I just kind of want to have fun. And let's just, what's the next thing? And who's the next people we can go hang out with? And just, I mean, I love Jesus. I love our family. But I just, it's not the depth that John has. I'm not an analyzer. And just to go, okay, I need to sit down and think through, you know, these questions or just kind of this situation and just really put a little bit of space into praying and thinking about this, because that's just not where I naturally go. Yeah. Because I know that he cares what I think, and he asks and he listens. And so there's just a responsibility in that. And I'm glad, and I think I've grown in that. But just to feel the weight in a good way of that as his, really the only person who can play that role.
That's so good. And so, you know, if you go back and listen to all these podcasts, we've got lots of conversations about, you know, elders and, you know, getting, you know, wisdom from the elders or from staff and, you know, reading and learning from everywhere you can. So all those are true. But if you're married, the person who should have the most influence over you is your spouse. And so, you know, in ministry, a lot of times you'll have someone who's a little bit more public, someone who's a little bit more behind the scenes. And the behind the scenes person can kind of go, you know, my role is somewhat less than. And if I could say anything to you that are listening, like, no, you have incredible influence. And I would say you should have potentially more influence than anyone else in your spouse's life. So you've got power. And you need to know know how to use it, and then B, understand just the weight and gravity, and take that really seriously. You don't get to sit back and go, well, they're the one with the microphone. You know, I take care of the house or the kids or whatever. No, you're actually the one who can go on a walk and say, hey, tell me how you're feeling. Have you thought about? I've been wondering. I've been praying. Hey, can you try this on for size? I might not be right, but I'm just wondering, you know. Or, hey, are you open to some feedback, you know? And a spouse has the ability to say something that no one else can. And I feel like I could fill up the rest of this conversation with stories like that. The one that comes to mind, Pam, is the sarcasm, you know, admonishment years ago. I don't know. Do you remember that at all? So I haven't shared this with you guys, but Pam and I are leaving, you know, kind of the social gathering. We hop in a car. We had, I remember the car. I can remember where we were sitting, you know, and the whole conversation. And I'm basically trying to get Pam to tell me just how funny I was that night. You know, I was like, basically, you know, you just have, sometimes you just go like, I was pretty funny tonight, you know? And so I'm probably throwing her, you know, some kind of, leading questions or comments where she can come back and go, that was just, you were hilarious. I laughed so hard. And so I'm doing this, she's not biting, you know? And so I think I just came out and said, like, I was pretty funny tonight. She looked at me and I don't even know the category to put. It wasn't disgust, but it was like, you live in an alternate universe kind of thing. It's like kind of that was the look, the vibe I was getting. And she said, here's the thing. And she wasn't mean. She was not mean. There was no anger. There was no energy around it. She just, it was a compassionate conversation, candidly. But she just said, hey, I'm not sure you understand that, like, your words really have bite to them. And when you're in those situations, and you know, and so you're sharing these witty comebacks, and people are laughing. And she said, it makes me wonder, honestly, if it's a nervous laughter, because they're worried if they are going to be your next victim. And man, I remember, to my shame, like a flash of anger, like, are you kidding me? You know, and I didn't say anything, and I just sat on it, and I thought, you know what? She's right. Everyone, there was, you know, many other people in the room, many other people that are walking with me during that season that all experienced that sarcasm. There was one person who could lean in and do so kindly and softly. And it was something that God just used in my life, you know? And so I still, it's amazing to me how many witty cutting things pop into my head in every situation, and I'm learning increasingly to sit on them. I remember after that conversation, we go to social situations, and I'm, you know, sitting there with my Diet Coke or whatever, and I didn't have anything to say, like, because I've been so trained to just, like, be sarcastic. I was like, I don't have anything, and I just sit there and kind of hold my Diet Coke and watch the whole thing go on until I learn how to, I'm overplaying this, but just, you know, talk like an adult and ask questions and things like that. So, but that's, you know, that's a little overplayed, but it's very emblematic of, I think, the really important, weighty, incredible role that a spouse has to play when you're in ministry, in any marriage. But I think in this context we're talking about here is ministry. So,
yeah, and I think just, I mean, I you said this, and I think everybody gets this, but just to remind, it is about lovingly calling out sin, but in the totality of it has to also be just the affirmations and the way that you can speak hope and truth. Just remind your spouse of truth, remind them who they are when there is that shadow, like, I know who you are. I've seen you for this many years. Yeah. And so I'm going to call out hard stuff, but I'm also going to remind you who you are and just speak incredible affirmation that no one else can.
Yeah. Kira, I had one question for you before we hop off this that I wanted to ask you. Advice for spouses who are married to preachers. What do you say? What do you not say right after the message has been given? Dave's preached a lot of messages. He preached our Good Friday service, and
so
just
good. So good.
I mean, to God be the glory. But dude, you crushed it. It was so great. Yeah. Our body was blessed. So, what have you learned to say? What have you learned not to say? Dave, you could also jump in here too. But that's one I've seen couples get sideways on.
I like to be very supportive, and I do feel very supportive of Dave because he is my favorite preacher. And I'll say, oh, that was awesome. Hey, I love this point. And I do really get into the sermons. I'm a note taker. And so I do really like to support what, you know, I really enjoy his messages. And so I do try to be really positive. And I do want to be sensitive if I can tell by his body posture that he didn't feel great about that message, you know? And I can tell all kinds of ways. Like, he has a text that he'll send me. If I wasn't there for something, I'll say, how'd that go? And he'll go, pretty good. And he does that little face with the big teeth, you know? And so, anyway, it's been, you know, and I want to be encouraging. Yeah. I try not to nitpick because I don't want anybody doing that to me. So
yeah.
I definitely don't. But, you wanted to share with.
Yeah, she's got this really, so she is very positive, but she has this rating scale. So if you get a good, it wasn't very good. That was good, then I know. Oh, no.
Rated on a curve.
Yeah, was it heresy? What was it? What happened in that? What was bad about it? One of the things, though, that she does, she knows, she's so used to my style that she knows when I'm on, when I'm not. But unbeknownst to her, a couple years ago, I noticed, hey, everybody is manuscripting. John, you and I went to the same seminary. We learned to preach without notes. And so always had a most minimalistic outline in front of me. And I just go kind of off the top of my head or whatever, rehearsed. And so I've noticed all the younger preachers that I admire that I was working with at the time were manuscripting. So I'll just try it. You know, so I did it and it just fell flat. And so, but I didn't tell Kara. And so after the sermon, I said, what'd you think? And she said, did you do anything different? I said, yeah. I said, I manuscript. She said, drop it. Don't ever do it again. And that was the end of the conversation. And so she can be direct when she needs. And honestly,
save your bullets.
I think my insecurities have gotten a little bit better that I need that. I need that kind of, hey, that was a swing and a miss, but good try, pal. You know, or that was a nice single today.
It's good. Yeah. So I just think that, you know, if you're married to a preacher or someone who speaks or those kinds of things, you can't understand just how vulnerable you feel when you hop off of that platform. You've just kind of poured your guts out and you've been preparing and incubating this message and you give it. And I don't care how good it went. There's a real insecurity. And so what you say in those moments has a lot to do with the rest of the day, the week, the month, and even like a lifetime. You can crush a soul. So I'm not saying to sit on that. I think, Kara, you've learned when to fire your bullets, you know, but overwhelmingly be positive. And, you know, Pam will speak sometimes. And I whatever she says, how was it? It's like, man, I was just glad to be there. It was so fun to watch you, you know. And if you want to press and, you know, and get down technical, that's probably, you can do that, you know, 3 days later. Don't do that in the moment. Again, it's just kind of people are really vulnerable. It's a funny part of being married to someone in ministry or in leadership in any kind of capacity. So I want to talk about just, you know, rapid fire things and ideas on how to have a great marriage in the context of ministry, you know. And so you don't need a prompt if you've just got something that you want to say. And I'll start here. I think if you will take everything you understand about ministry, about leadership, and apply it to your marriage, you will win. And here's what I see is that people will, they like crush it, you know, from early in the morning until the time they come home. They are attentive. They listen really well. They've got clarity on where they're going. They've got big ideas. They're developing people, you know, they're resolving conflict. They walk in. They walk home and they've left nothing in the tank, or you know, someone doesn't greet them at the door. They wish they should be greeted, and they just kind of forget all of that stuff and become a different person. And I would just say for most people, they don't need marriage books are super helpful. Fan of marriage intensives, all the things. But if you'll just take some of those same skills that you know about leading organizations, leading other people, leading things, and apply them to your marriage, and I would just use the word intentionality. Just take that same intentionality, whatever it is that you're trying to build, lead, grow, and apply that same intentionality, you will have a fantastic marriage. And you will figure out what needs to happen. Just like I will bet you, if you're listening to this podcast, we could drop you in any organization that's a bit of a mess. You will, with some intentionality and a lot of hard work, prayer, and energy, you will fix whatever is in front of you, or you will die trying. And if you'll just apply that same MO to your marriage, you will do great. So that would be one I'd want leaders to know. You have it in you. You know all these things. You just need to apply it to the person that you wake up to, that God's son, God's daughter, that he has given you to be yoked with until death do us part. So what else comes to mind? How to have a great marriage?
You know, one of the things that I've seen in our marriage and other marriages that I think is consistent when you see a happy marriage, a godly and a happy marriage, is just a dynamic spirituality at the core of it, meaning that it's mutually encouraging. You know, I started out thinking that, okay, my job is to open up the Bible and, you know, almost teach Kara seminary class, you know, every night at dinner, which, you know, there were things that, and I was going through seminary at the time, so there were things that were interesting to her, but that's not really how she was going to connect deeply with the Lord. That might be interesting in a trivial way. But over time, what I learned is she just has this dynamic, abiding relationship with Jesus. And what we began to do over the years is just share our devotional insights. And I've gained so much from what she's learning. And it's really been something that's been edifying to me and encouraging me. And I hope there's things that I've done for her in the same way. But when that dynamic is in place, it's give and take. It's not just the pastor is pastoring his wife in the way that he might pastor a congregant, you know, with, and I'm not suggesting that we don't open up the Bible and study together. We should. But there's that dynamic of spirituality that's happening. It's just great. It's just really great. And when it's absent, you feel it. You really, you feel dry and you feel like, oh, this is harder than it has to be.
Yeah, that's good. I know there's better husbands than me that are able to pull this off. But we have that same story, Dave. Our first, like literally first day back from the honeymoon. We've got this little table. I can picture it. It's got three legs on it. So it's a little bit wobbly. It's white. We're sitting there. We both have our NIV study Bibles. And so like it's game time. I'm now going to lead my wife spiritually. Like I'm ready for this. And we open up our Bibles and we're I'm going to like teach Pam something from scripture. And we go through a couple verses and I say, this this passage means this. And she goes, no, it doesn't. She said, I don't think that's what it means. I don't think that's what it means. And, we argued would be to overplay it, but we sat there and discussed it. And I go, I don't know what spiritual leadership is, but I don't think this is it, you know? And if this is what it takes is for me to encourage Pam spiritually is to lead her in a Bible study daily, I don't think I'm going to be very good at this marriage thing, you know? And we settled into a spot that's like, yeah, hey, this is what God's doing in my life. What about you? What are you learning? What words of encouragement do you have for me and vice versa? What are we seeing in our kids' life? It's been really fun, but it hasn't been. It has not been verse by verse inductive Bible study, at least not for us. Somebody is way better. They're more compelling and more accurate Bible teacher than me. They can pull this off. But gals, anything top of mind, how to have a great marriage and ministry?
Yeah, I think just figuring out what for you as a couple or you as a family, like what's life giving to you. So like back to what I said, like when you ask someone, hey, how's your ministry? First thought should be marriage, family, and not the paid job ministry, even though that does permeate kind of all of your life. But I think for us is just figuring out what's life giving to us. For us as a couple, as a family, it's just to like have adventures together and just to have kind of a fun thing, whether it's just this weekend we're going to go down and do this hike or whether it's some big, you know, trip we've got coming up or some big expedition we're going to go on. So that's just really life-giving to us. And so that's not necessarily ministry, quote unquote. You know, we're just the two of us are taking time together. We're not at the church. We're not working. We're not leading a class. But that is very life-giving to us, which then helps us be better in our ministry.
Yeah. I think if anything else, maybe I would just use the word prioritization. You know, it's just something that we just prioritize. And so we've talked about before, diverting daily, withdrawing weekly and abandoning annually. And that's a good rhythm for marriage as well, not just your spiritual life. And so for every, you know, I think every year, as long as I can remember, we put something on the calendar with just you and I, even, you know, didn't matter how many kids we had and how many diapers needed to be changed. Mm-hmm. We'd call in all the favors and we would just, you know, just spend a couple days together. It wasn't extravagant early on, I remember. And I remember one place we stayed that now, every time we drive, we Priceline'd it. You guys remember Priceline? You know, you don't know where you're going to get. And we drive by it today. And we're like, how in the world did we go? It's here in Dallas and it's not safe, but it's all we could afford. And that's okay. Pam just wanted to sleep. She's like, if I could sleep for like 3 days. And so, you know, we were so tired and that was where that year, that's how we got away. You know, then weekly we have some type of rhythm or weekly every other week, depending on what it was to spend time together.
Right.
You know, date nights and, you know, Dave, you guys were talking about just kind of your simple date nights. I remember, you know, Pam and I, that was our discussion. It was like, hey, we can have food or we can have a babysitter, but we can't have both, you know? And so we would just kind of decide. And a lot of times we would, during that season, we would with little kids, we would go get food. We'd put the kids down, you know, I'd run, make them run wind sprints in the backyard, just tire them out as fast as I possibly could and get them to bed. And then we would just sit there and, you know, and catch up. That was the time we were at our best, but there was a prioritization of it. And now we're empty nest and we're so glad that we prioritized. We get to do ministry together, but we also get to enjoy each other, you know, and which should be the good season. I feel like we've eaten our vegetables now and we get dessert, dessert time, you know, we've paid the price or maybe just said a life of prioritization. We like being married. I know you guys too. So, Kara, friend, anything else? Just, you know, advice to young leaders on how to have a great marriage, how to make this all work in ministry.
Well, I really do appreciate Dave prioritizing me and the kids. And even when we were We were, I think, just engaged, and I lived in Chicago, and he came, and our pastor, my pastor, was talking to us, and he said, you know, make your wife first in your life, and make your kids your priority. Don't let the church, you know, overpower yeah. that. And we heard that, and we did listen, and we haven't done it perfectly, but it's always been in the back of our mind, and that has been our goal. And our goal was that we would love Jesus, that we would love one another, that we would love the church, and then we prayed for that for our kids, you know, yeah. that they would love Jesus, that yeah. they would mm-hmm. love one another, and that they would love the church. And by God's grace, they do, and we do, and it is all a work of the Holy Spirit for sure, because we are very, we are sinners
yeah.
in need of saving, yeah. and He is saving us for sure.
In spite of us. Yeah, yeah, that's good, but just a priority that you guys felt like out of the gate.
Yeah.
It's not we're going to get to when, after the important work of church is done,
yeah.
but it is the important work
it is.
Above all else.
Yeah. I can remember like we talked about earlier, you know, we didn't have the money for babysitting and stuff, but you know, moving the couch around, you know, in our den and making it look the den look different, you know. So it was our date night, but it just happened to be at our house while the kids were asleep. Yeah. And then also like just family stuff, you know, we would do Monday night wrestling, you know.
With the kids or with each other?
No, that was actually with the
that
kids.
That might have been okay. more fun, but okay. yeah, it was the kids.
Yes, and they remember that. They remember oh, Monday night.
Sock fight night.
Yeah,
I yeah,
love it was that. Fun. Jillian was the most powerful.
Oh, yeah. I took a beating. Every Monday night, I was the big
oh,
loser.
My God. Yeah.
As it should be.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't regret. You don't regret
no.
any of that. And at the time, your blood sugar was low. You had
yeah.
problems to solve. Inbox, it was out of control.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, I can have a date night or I can play with my kids. And you don't regret it.
I don't, John. And one of the things I did really intentionally, I don't know if Karen knows I did this because I didn't put it on a calendar or anything, but I just probably once a month, if not once every other month, we would go out and have a date night. And my sole objective was just to be to listen to her, what her vision
so good.
And her dreams
so
were
good.
For our family. Because so much of what I was doing as a visionary leader of the church, that bleeds into everything. And all you do all the time is talk about what you want to do
right,
and where
right,
you want
right.
to go. And,
yeah.
and it just gets old, you know, it gets hard for her. And so I would just listen. And my one objective is, honey, what do you dream about our family? What do you dream yeah. about our life together? What's your vision for what's happening? And then she's just been super faithful through the years to drop stories in a way that's really encouraging and just seeing evidence of God's grace. And whether it's our friends that we're ministering to, whether it's the church, she just was particularly attentive to capture stories and points of inflection when God was at work. And
yeah.
she wanted to remind me because so much of what we do is invisible. Like we don't see the fruit of it. And she was so quick to show us
yeah.
that together. So, but I love those nights where I just listened and I asked questions and I really got a sense of what the Lord was doing in her heart and the way He was forming her dreams and her desires
yeah.
for our future together, rather than just, hey, I'm here to lead and I've got a great direction. Here's a PowerPoint presentation, Kara, and here's a new, you know, vision statement for us together. Let's go. You know, yeah. I had to fight that.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
I love that, just reminding stories, just to remind, like, hey, God's been using us sometimes because we're in the weeds. Like we kind of forget that. And God's been really gracious lately just to send even just a couple of emails John's way that He's forwarded to me from just people that we never would have heard of, you know, maybe known till eternity, that have just said, hey, this has made an impact.
Wow.
And so that's been encouraging. And then I remember when our kids were young and like we were trying to get up here, Reengage was starting and small group and the younger ones didn't want to be in childcare. I mean, it was just a lot. And then we would come home and just tell stories with appropriate detail, you know, and for their age. But just, hey, guys, you get credit for this, too. Like, this is a family ministry. We're doing this together. Thanks for taking one for the team. Let me just tell you about this husband and wife who weren't going to make it. God used this ministry and this church, and you guys get credit, too.
Yep.
So just reminding each other of stories and even our family that this is kind of why we do it. It's a big deal.
So good. Yeah. So good. Yeah. We use, and Pam and I use a pronoun, you know, we, us a lot. Always has been, you know, one of us gets a paycheck. I want to talk about that in a second, actually, expectations. But we talk about we and our ministry and those kinds of things together because I want it to feel that way.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I think that round table right there was prioritization, listening, loving, investing, you know, do something fun. Pam and I did a series of learning dates one year. We just kind of learned something once a month. We did pottery. We blew glass, which is actually less exciting than it sounds.
Literally,
like
they did all the work and they were like, here, blow in this tube. Like, oh. That was all.
I thought I was going to handle 3,000 degree glass. I just got to blow. Another year, this might be helpful. It's along your lines, Dave, of being fully present. We called it the best of us dates. And so once a month we'd put on the calendar. I'd come home, early if I could. And we would always leave, like 5:30, something like that. And we'd go to dinner, whatever it was. But we showed up like 100% available for each other. And so that actually started the night before. We said, we're going to treat this like the most important event on our calendar for the month. And so you go to bed early the night before, right? So if you had a big presentation, that you looked at your calendar, you go, this is the day that really matters, or the big talk or whatever it was. Like, we treated that date like that. And so we went to bed early, made sure we were emotionally in a good spot, came with energy, and we're just there. It's like, hey, you get the app of this entire month, you get the absolute best of me. Those were like sacred, and those were amazing nights, and I think both of us didn't want other people to get our best. So whatever it is for you, I would say, we've always, we said, if we're going to cheat on the budget anywhere, we're going to cheat on us. Everything else is a depreciating asset. We are appreciating asset. We're going to be around for a long time. And so we'll skimp on, cars and things like that. We probably shouldn't, violate the budget, but on us, if we're going to go outside the lines, we're going outside the lines on us, because kids are going to move out, everything else is going to go on, but we will be left with each other, and the ministry will end at some point as well. So real quick, expectations. So a lot of times the whole proverbial, boy, you hire one, you get two, meaning you hire the pastor, and then the pastor's wife is obligated to work 60 hours a week, at the church and play piano would be the, back at the turn of the century, but kids ministry and all the things. So gals, any thoughts on that? Just expectations in ministry, how to handle them, how to think about it, and then we'll look to land the plane here in a second.
I just really appreciate here specifically at Watermark, like, it wasn't that feeling. It was, we're hiring John, and I'm a member here, and so there is an expectation that I'm involved. I'm serving, all the things as a normal member, but there's not this other level of expectation that's on me, I don't feel like. And so early on, when there were lots of kids and just couldn't get to everything, I felt a freedom, like I'm not at every single thing. Now there's definitely freedom. And so, man, I'm there also because I want to be, and serving. And so I appreciate that with the expectation.
Yep, that's good. I think, so I would just say, let's just say traditional roles here to represent it just like it does a table. Hey, if you are interviewing somewhere, you want to make it crystal clear they're hiring you and not your spouse. And so you both say that, and then you ask questions about the culture that you're walking into. The easiest litmus test and tell is the senior pastor. If you're going to work on a staff, what's the senior pastor's wife or the couple that was there before you? How did that go? And if you want to make a break, you make that crystal clear. And then I would just say for the rest of you that get to actually set culture and get to decide, like, make sure it's crystal clear. We pay this person, and this person is a member of our church. So to be a member of our church means that, whatever it is, you serve, you're a member of a small group, and you give, and we're going to expect that of you. And that the church is important. It's not the most important thing in your life, but it's very important, and you like act accordingly. But you don't have to be here at the beginning and the end of everything that we do, and you're not free labor. And so we would never do that to you. So you get a chance to set that culture, but make sure that you do. Don't take advantage of people and their spouses. You don't want, you lose if you get some quick wins and quick, help, but they become embittered toward the church and to you. Like, you just play the long game and be Christian about it. Okay, so we're in the studio. Ashley, who is our producer here, asked a great question. Hey, What advice would you give to those who are single and then they become married while in ministry? So any quick thoughts there?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is just kind of in the vein of what we've been saying this whole time is when you're married, that is your priority. That's your first ministry. And so whatever that looks like for you as a couple to be ministering together, and it might look different. John and I have had different seasons where he's serving in men's, you know, dad's class, and I've got women's Bible study, but we're still looking for, we're still serving the church together. And then when we can, we serve together. And so maybe moving to somewhere where you could lead a small group together of, yeah, of young married couples, or just serving kids together or something like that, but just moving to a way to serve together. But again, the ministry is first the marriage.
Yep, that's good. So just it will look different. That would be, and you're going to have to prioritize it. So it doesn't mean that ministry is over or that your inability to lead or that you're now going to be unable to lead. Absolutely not. But it is different, and your priority now becomes marriage. And that's what Paul was saying. Hey, some of you might be better for you to stay single so you could stay focused. But if you get married, that is now, honestly, I would say 1 Peter 3:7, it's a litmus test of, do you love God? Is do you love your spouse? And it starts there. Not you don't just wedge that into what you're doing. So, you know, one of the things that's just on my list I want to make sure we talk about is that the pastors, leaders, people in ministry, they need a place to go and be honest. They need a place. They need couples. They need a small group that they can be honest. I know it's hard. Sometimes in your ministry, you worry that things you say can and will be used against you. But that's going to be, I really do think, a determiner of how healthy your marriage is. And so, you know, Dave and Kara, we were about to go meet you guys a couple weeks ago, or it's been a couple months now, I think. And I would say probably an hour and a half before that, boy, Pam and I were frustrated. Frustrated doesn't quite do it justice. What would
yeah,
you say?
Yeah, I mean, that's the angriest I think we've been with each other in a decade. Yeah. I can't even think back to when we were. So there were tears. Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so so I remember going, okay, we can sit here and get it all together and walk in like everything's amazing and we had the best weekend ever. How was your weekend? And I just looked at Pam and she said, "Are you okay if we share?" And I was like, absolutely, we're going to share. And so we sat down and the chips came, we ordered our drinks, and I, you know, Pam was just like, hey, can we be honest about kind of where we are? And we sat there and just mowed through those chips and just talked about what was going on, you know, and both of us asked each other's forgiveness and ended up in a good spot. But I think about those moments times 1,000, whatever, the big ones and small ones, people tend to not want to share those with anybody else. And I think it's a part of God's grace is just sharing and having other people in your life that can walk with you and can admonish, encourage, help, and be patient. And so Dave and Carrie, you guys were great that night. Pam, I appreciated you just wanting to be honest. And I think it's a good model if you can get there. Be careful. You know, I wouldn't run around with every person you've ever met and tell them, you know, hey, we're so ticked off at each other tonight. But and I think too, a competitive advantage we have as you know, Christian leaders is we understand, we teach the gospel, and boy, we should be able to give it and express it to each other. And Pam and I think about you know, that Ephesians 2, where we are by nature deserving of wrath, but instead, God gave us mercy. You know, and I just think in moments in marriage, all humanity understands, like, I should be ticked off at you, but I'm going to give you mercy. But it's those of us who teach the gospel, it should be first and foremost to our minds. I've received this mercy when I deserved wrath. I want to give that. And Pam does a great job. Just for brevity, I won't tell stories, but Pam has shown me mercy when I deserve wrath. So, Dave, I want to move to land the plane here, and I want you to go into pastor coach mode here.
Okay,
and so
you got it.
You know, imagine, you know, there's an empty seat to my right here. There's a young man, and he's zealous and he's ready to do ministry, and you get it. Just a little bit of time with him to tell him why everything we just talked about mattered. This kind of skewed to more of the practical, but why does this matter? And what are your thoughts on that? What does God think about this? Why should this be a priority to this young up and coming leader?
Yeah, it's such a good question, John. You know, I would want to really make my point strongly to this hypothetical young man that when we look at the scripture, particularly we look at the qualifications of an elder, of which this young man clearly aspires to be, and particularly through 1 Timothy 3, there's a lot of character requirements, but there's really only two skill sets if you look at it. One is able to teach the word, but the other is to love his wife faithfully and love her well and to lead his home well. And so you get this concept very quickly that the way in which a husband leads his wife is the same way in which he will pastor the church.
Yes.
You see in microcosm, in that marriage relationship, the strengths and the weaknesses of how that man will be this leader. So I would want him to know that the test case, the research lab, the practice field for pastoring a church really is, and the priority to it, is loving your wife as Christ loved the church, to love her only, to love her faithfully, to be a one-woman man. Yeah. And when I've come in on the broken side, John, of marriages that have failed, or even churches that have failed, let's take the churches that have failed concept. You can work back upstream and you can see if that church failed because the pastor was leading poorly, you can see the same stream running through his marriage.
Absolutely.
If he's a domineering leader, he's a domineering husband. If he's a passive leader, he's a passive husband. If he's a resentful leader, he's a resentful husband. And so God gives us these priority relationships, and it's not as if we become different people when we step into a bigger stage of leading the church. It really is the same thing, just with a different context and maybe a broader group of people. What do you think? What would you want that guy to know?
It is the qualification. It's not something you do in addition to, being awesome at your job. There, 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1, it's all the qualifications to be an elder, to be a leader, maybe just broadly a leader, are really character issues, with the exception of being able to teach. And the bulk of that, honestly, if you go look at how much ink is spent on the marriage and family, it's disproportionate to anything else that's in that list. And so I think it is, one, it is the priority, but two, it's also a really good tell. And so, Paul's saying, hey, if you want to pick a guy, if you're looking for a guy to lead the church, you want to find a guy that's doing a great job at home. And it's the qualification, and it is his ministry. It's his first ministry. And so, friends, as you're listening here, I would ask you, how is your ministry? How's your ministry? And I'm not talking about numbers. I'm not talking about growth. I'm not talking about budgets. I'm talking about your home. I'm talking about your spouse. I'm talking about your kids. How is your ministry? And that's the table stakes before you sit down to play this incredible privilege of a game of ministry that we are honored to be a part of. How's your ministry? And if it's not well at home, you wouldn't be the first. And there is God's grace to cover a multitude of sins. But I would shine some light on it. I'd get some help. I'd repent. Let some people in. Don't pretend like everything's okay. And make sure you got your priorities straight. Make sure that you understand, other people can pastor your church, but you're the only mom, dad for these kids. You're the only spouse that your spouse has. And so do what only you can do, and then you can do what others could do as well. And by God's grace, you should be able to do both. And there is a really, really great synergy. But friends, I Dave, you and I are so zealous to see people finish well. And this is such an inordinately powerful component of someone's life that if this doesn't go well, it has the ability to knock them off, the ability to finish well. And so, because I also care about longevity in ministry, God cares about longevity in ministry and leadership. You should care deeply about this. But friends, thanks so much for listening. Ladies, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You guys are both, Dave and Kara, we honor you and your marriage. You guys, I think, should look for more ways to encourage couples. I've told you this. You guys have something really special.
Yep.
And then, babe, you've been an amazing ministry partner. It has been such a fun
It's been
run.
A good ride.
It's been such a fun run. So, friends, thanks for listening. As always, if you have questions or comments, you can reach us at clp@watermark.org. That's clp@watermark.org. We'll talk to you again next time.